All right, count it down. Another episode, another week of the podcast here. Tall Tales with Taylor Jones. Thank you for joining. I'm Taylor Jones. I'm your host and your ringleader, your circus. What do you call that? What's that, Cal? What's that person that does the circus leader? What's that guy called?
A ringleader.
The ringleader?
I think.
I don't know if that's him or not. But anyway, I'm that guy. But today with me, I got my soul sister and bandmate and friend for a long time, Miss Callie Cryer, on the horn.
Hello.
Welcome back to town. She came over here on her off day. She's only got like 48 hours off, but she came over here and gave me one of them. So that's like 1/48th of your life.
Actually, this week I think I had almost four whole days.
Four whole days?
It was a big difference.
Yeah, like 4 days is enough to like, okay.
I'm like, I might go to the grocery store. I'm going to be around enough to eat food.
I might actually cook something today. Yeah. I'm not just going to go to Baja and then go bed and go back on the road.
Yep.
Which is what we all do. We're like, what's my Nashville go-to food when I come home? Baja's definitely on the list.
Yep.
So what's good? So it's been 6 or 8 months or so since we've talked last on here. What's going on? What you been up to? What you doing on the road?
Well, I'm just out gigging with Matt Maher still. It's going well. We had a kind of an emotional weekend because we had to say goodbye to our beloved front of house.
Oh, my gosh.
Keithan, which was a sad, sad time. He's decided to come off the road, so we did that this weekend and gave him a farewell. But things are good with me. I'm singing with Matt. I'm playing acoustic guitar, ukulele, tambourine, and bringing the sass. That's my
bringing
job.
Bringing the sass.
That's how he introduces me at night.
The sass master.
He says, playing all this blah, 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 and bringing sass.
There you go.
Callie Cryer. So that's what I do.
That's your job description then.
Although, actually, he switches off. Sometimes he'll introduce me as our resident best friend, which is a joke playing off of everyone teasing me about having RBF, which,
oh boy.
Audience, if you don't know what RBF stands for,
Google it.
It is a acronym for a term called resting bitch face, which is used to describe women like me who tend to scowl when they're not thinking hard. When we're resting, our face is a scowl. So everybody teased me about that, and they decided to change the RBF to, instead of standing for resting bitch face, to stand for our resident best friend.
Whoa. So they're like, it's a rib on the audience because they don't know.
They don't know. So Matt, when Matt says resident best friend, everybody else knows what that really means.
But the band is popping huge.
Yeah.
Dude, that's the kind of stuff on the road that's like the stuff that we love. You know, the freaking inside jokes and popping each other on the stage or in some other area in front of other people and they have no clue what you're talking about.
Yep.
The inside jokes are hilarious. So what's the difference in like doing your own project as an indie band to being on being as like the side musician for Matt? Like what's the sort of how does that make you feel kind of?
Well, there's less there's automatically going to be a little bit less stress, I think, cuz you're less invested.
Yeah, I'd agree to that.
Not that, you know, as a sideman you don't care about the music or care if the show goes well or anything like that. It's just not on you.
The pressure.
I don't have to talk. I don't have to do any of that on stage, which can be nice. Talking is hard. It's hard to be funny and, you know, get over in between the songs. When you don't have to do that, then it's less pressure. But I mean, it's got its downsides too. Obviously it's a hard feeling when you're, you know, giving it all you got and you're doing everything you can on stage. And I'm just like, man, I'm rocking it. I'm doing so good. Like, I'm just giving everything I have. And everybody in my section in front of the stage, they're looking at Matt Maher.
Oh, my gosh.
Which for someone like me who's been a lead singer of her own band for 7 years, you kind of like have to get used to that a little bit and be like, man, this is not about me tonight. But every now and then, you know, I'll get a night where it's sort of reminiscent of the Vespers, because like a few nights ago we did a show in this basketball gym, and it was really, really well attended, and there was a ton of middle school and high school girls, and they liked me a whole lot. So that was funny. It was like they weren't even looking at Matt some of the time, and I was like, oh man, this is like being the Vespers again. But I mean, that's just for the stage stuff. Other than that one, you know, time of day, the days are pretty chill for me. You know, I can sleep as late as I want most of the time. I don't really have a whole lot of responsibility during the day. And, yeah, it's pretty nice.
That's right up your alley.
Yeah.
No responsibilities and sleeping a lot.
Everybody was teasing me the other day because one of the green rooms at the church we were playing at had like 4 or 5 really soft couches in there. So I went in my bunk and I got my blanket and my pillow, and I curled up on the couch and started reading a book. And then I ended up falling asleep. And so people are coming in and out of the green room all day, and I'm just there like snuggled up in like my little couch bed. And everyone's laughing because they have more stuff to do during the day because everyone has more gear to set up than me and everything like that. So they were all just making fun of me.
So what's the living in the bunk like? Is it everything you ever dreamed or what?
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, it's nice to... I mean, there's... It's like, you know, when we were torn in a van, you just had to find ways to kill time in the van. And that really doesn't change because even though you're already there when you wake up in the morning, you have a whole day of just sitting in some random church in the middle of nowhere trying to kill time. So at least you have the option of getting up and walking around and exploring occasionally. Still, you end up watching stuff on your phone, reading a book, same type of stuff all day. So that part isn't a whole lot different.
So tell me about, they were making fun of you when you first started because you're like crushing water bottles and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, tell me about that.
I forgot about that. Well, everybody teases me about how much water I drink on stage. And when I first started, our guitar tech, Josh, who's also known as Scrumpy Bear, which is short for Scrumptious Bear, which has a long story of why he's called that. But basically, we call him Scrumps. So Scrumps is on my side of the stage when we first started. He's since switched to the left, stage left. But he would put out water for me. And when I first started, he'd give me like one water bottle to start the show. And I would crush it in like the first 3 songs. And I would throw the empty water bottle at him. That's just to be silly.
You're throwing the thing
I'd
at
throw
him,
empty water bottles at him because he's like just backstage on my side, so I can just toss my trash at him.
Oh my gosh.
So that kind of became a joke. And then he started putting out more water bottles so he wouldn't have to come out and give me more in the middle of the show. And I have a habit of crushing my water bottles up. Because in the van, you know, we have that tiny trash can. So if you empty a water bottle, it takes up all the space. So I'll just crush them.
Yeah.
And everybody thought that was funny, I guess, because Matt does that. And they were like, no one else does that except for Matt. And I was like, well, it's a habit from touring in a van.
It is, you know, because it's conservation of space is all it is.
Yep.
You can fit 100 of those suckers in there crushed. You can fit 4 in there if they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you crush them up, tighten the lid back on there so they stay small.
Yep.
That's our gimmick. If you haven't ever seen that, we patented that a long time ago.
And even audience members now will come up to me afterwards while I'm packing up my stuff and be like, you had 5 bottles of water during that show. That's what you noticed?
Dude.
Of everything I was doing tonight, you cared about how much water I had.
Okay. You guys. Way to go, team.
Yeah.
Way to go, team. So what's everybody's, it seems like you guys have a pretty cool community, like everybody gets along real good and has like a family vibe.
Yeah.
Got all these inside jokes and stuff, is that true?
Yeah, it's a real good group. I mean, it's not like it's perfect and there's never drama or anything like that, but you got like, I think it's pretty typical, you got like 1 or 2 people in your group that are going to be like the drama queen causing people, and then everybody else just kind of puts up with that. And then you've got 1 or 2 people that are kind of like, always stay out of the drama. They're just not into that. And we have more of people like that, so it's nice.
Well, there's a real art to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a while to realize how important it is, but
yeah, I'm learning that really the biggest thing on the road is the people I don't want to be around, the people I want to steer clear of are the people that talk about people. And I don't want to be that person. So that's what I've learned a lot from this, is just when you got a group of, you know, 10, 12 people, stuff gets said and you just don't want to be the one that's saying it.
Yeah, it's so true, because
then no one trusts you.
It gets all around. And yeah, like you said, if you hear somebody talking about somebody else, and they're going to talk about you.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, like, I'm not going to be around you if that's what you're going to do, because then I'm just giving you more ammo to talk to somebody else bad about me. So
right,
I just try to stay out of that and not be the person that's talking bad, so everybody knows they can count on me to, you know, stick up for them behind their back.
Yeah. Well, you've always been good about that. You don't hold no punches, and you give your opinion when asked it, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
But staying in the lane. Stay in your lane.
If somebody asks you, then you can say something, but if they don't ask you, they don't want to know.
Stay in your lane. Stay in your bunk. That's how we do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, oh, mercy. Well, it's been crazy. It's hard to believe it's already been six or so months, well, September, since we did the last one.
Yeah, I was thinking about, we haven't played music together since February.
God, I know.
Sad times.
I know. What are we doing with our lives? That's a good question.
Yeah.
We'll think about that. It'll be a whole nother podcast worth.
Yeah.
So, well, what is the update with us? What's happening with the Vespers? What are we going to, I know people are going, if they're listening to this, they're wondering why we haven't been doing anything, but what are we doing? What are we not doing?
Well, I mean, what I've been telling people is we decided to take a little break from touring because it was real hard on, especially Phoebe and Beck, but it was just kind of a lot more work than payoff with a baby. And that we still book stuff when it makes sense, but just because everybody had to kind of fill in their time doing other stuff to make ends meet, a lot of times it's a scheduling thing. Like, we've tried, I mean, you've seen, we've tried to, you know, can we do this show, and not everybody's always free to do it. So,
and the freaking airplane thing was weird. Like,
I know,
like, we were like gonna go to Florida and play one show, all get there, pack all our junk and go, and that gun plane gets canceled.
Yeah, we were looking forward to that.
The storm, it stormed it out. And I had somebody in my car the other day, or right after that, that Monday after that, that was down there at that festival and said it was completely obliterated that day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, only the last two bands played.
Jeez.
So, when we went down there, we wouldn't have got to play anyways.
Yeah.
But storms, man. That was weird. We've kind of gone through this thing of, like, man, there's a lot of obstacles for us right now.
Yeah, it's like the Lord's shutting some doors and opening other doors. So I'm just walking through whatever's open.
Right.
That's kind of how I'm looking at it.
I know. And it's a weird place to be, because, like, you don't know what to say. I guess I like your explanation of it real good. I should have known I would. But I don't really know what to tell people either, because I don't want to sound, like, pitiful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, or like the band broke up or anything like that. Certainly not the case. It's just...
No. But it feels like that.
Not kinda. We're not in a phase of activity.
Yeah, I don't even know what to do. Like, I've been thinking about, you know, calling Phoebe on the phone and being like, hey, let's try to write some songs or whatever. But I don't even know, like, if I should call her, if she's even, like, you know what I mean? If we're even creative, you know what I mean? That's how I feel. I'm like, is it even, like, a good idea for us? Or should we legit take the whole year and just not think about it and go? Because, I mean, we're only this is May. I mean, we're not even that far into the year, and I'm already, like, going, like, stir crazy, not knowing what to do, you know, and looking ahead to the future and going, well, should we be trying to write right now? Or, like, would that mean that we have to do another record? Are we even going to even do that? Would that mean that you would tour the record? I just don't even know.
I mean, I think it's important to not force things, because, I mean, there's a lot of examples of this. Like, Nickel Creek's an example. I mean, they straight up broke up, and we haven't done that, but, you know, eventually they got the itch to play music together again. They wrote a bunch of songs, made a new record, great record, did a tour, you know, stuff like that. And I'm sure that itch will hit us, and we'll be like, I gotta make music with these people. We gotta do something.
Yeah, because it's weird, because I feel so strange on my own.
Hmm.
You know, I don't know how to put myself over. My identity is sort of caught up in you guys' identity.
Mm.
You know, and our identity as a whole. And I'm just like, man, like, do I know how to do anything else? Like, do I know how to? But yeah, obviously, you do.
I can definitely relate to that. I mean, Reed and I have been trying to write together some, because we were trying to start a little duo just on the side, you know, for just so we can make music together.
Right.
And I'm like, man, it's weird writing without one of y'all. You know, it's weird, like, trying to come up with stuff without having the resource of a band around you to test out how your idea is going to sound. And so I'm like, man, do I even know how to write like this? You know?
Yeah, it's so similar, man. It's hard to feel like an actual songwriter when you've been in a band and written songs.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you've never actually had to sit down and do the song by yourself.
Yeah.
You've always done a percentage of it, mm-hmm. and then it's open for interpretation the rest of the way. And that's kind of that creative process. So, I don't know. I feel like it's so funny having any songwriter credits whatsoever, because I've never sat down by myself and written a song.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't feel confident as a writer on my own. Like, I wrote with Matt a month or two ago, and I felt like he was doing most of the work, you know?
Yeah, it's hard not to feel like somebody else is carrying you when you're mm-hmm. used to being
carried.
Yeah, like, we are. We just are. And like, but in a band, it's totally okay to feel that way. It's all okay to approach it
right,
that way.
Right, right.
Because you know, like, that's what the other people are for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard not in this crazy, like, Nashville songwriter style. Mm. Like, if you don't bring something to the table, like, why are you here?
Right.
Kind of thing. Like, I'm wasting this percentage of the song on you,
mm-hmm.
is sort of the vibe you get. So, I don't know. Maybe we're overthinking it, Kyle.
I mean, it's important to remember, too, like, even if you're in a write and you are feeling like everyone else is kind of doing all the work, a lot of the times you are contributing just by saying the things that aren't used,
right.
that are sparking the ideas that are used.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Because often I think I notice that a lot when I'm writing, like, well, we didn't really use any of my lyrics or this person's lyrics, but the song would not have been written the way it was written had they not been in that room. And you have to remember that. It's, you can't, like, count stuff or, you know, be like, well, we only use one of my lines or stuff like that. Is because me and Matt were talking about that when we were writing, because he was like, yeah, sometimes that you just need that one person in there that says the thing that gives you the idea of what you were going to say.
No, I think you're right. Cause I mean, like, writing with Phoebe is that way 100% mm-hmm. because she can spit out line after line. You know what
but
I mean?
But you kind of nudge her in a certain direction.
Yeah. And some, but then she'll just stop and she'll start, like, not being sure if the song is good. And I'm like, what happened there? Mm-hmm. Like, what, you were on a roll and then now you've just put it down when we get to the bridge. Or the second verse, or whatever. Like, the verse chorus will be money, and she doesn't see it that way. So it's like different gifts or whatever. Like, she has a gift of producing the stuff.
But she needs the encouragement to keep till the
end.
Yeah,
and I can't produce it, but, like, I can identify it.
Mm-hmm.
I can identify the talent and the juice. And in the end, like, you know, write a bridge. I can mm-hmm. do that, or second verse, or whatever, to finish the song. Because it's like, dude, when you're that close, that's inspiring.
Right.
You know, like, it's really easy. Like, New Kids. Phoebe had the freaking hook to New Kids already done. Like, as it
Someone
is on the record.
Someone just had to be like, this is great.
Yeah. Like,
finish this.
She's like, oh, here's this little thing I have. And I was like, yo, what is that?
Yeah.
You know? But she had the hook, like, as it is on the record. Even the groove of it, the way she played the guitar, everything was exactly how we did it.
Right.
All we had to do with Paul was make a decent set of verses around it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because she had, like, that, the vibe and the sound was already even there. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, she's one of those types.
Yeah, that was one of those easy songs. I remember in the studio, we were just like, boom.
Yeah, we knocked that right out.
Yeah.
Because it was already done.
The sound wasn't up for a debate. Everyone
No, it's
felt
not like,
it.
Oh, we got to produce it this way to make it sound like, no, you just freaking record it and it's going to sound how it sounds.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really matter. So, but yeah, she's that way. I've been thinking about calling her. I probably just need to call her and see what she's vibing, you know, because I know she's got, like, windows of her day where she's probably just, like, you know, got 2 hours here, 2 hours there of, like, well, what can we do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that would be a good thing, because I kind of am of the belief that if we had songs, like, new songs, like a whole crop of new songs, that would maybe shape what we thought more so than right now. We really have nothing but old songs in our hands. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's weird. So anyway, I'm out. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just thinking about how Reed and I have been writing more. And, yeah, like, if you write a good song, that's enough to get you excited enough to start a band right there. You know, a good song will just make you so motivated.
Yeah, that's the art thing. And we're sitting here in this room where we've done that 1,000 times or whatever. And it's like, it just doesn't take much of a spark.
Yeah.
You know, to like, yo, we can spend, and next thing you know, 4 hours are gone.
Yeah.
But you have a song, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of the weird, like, the magical part of it all. You know what, though? I was talking to Zach on my last podcast, Zach Crowell. He's like, you know, produced some of the hit songs in the last 5 years, you know? And he goes, here's what's weird. I thought that songs on the radio and all this and that, you know, awards, countless ACM, Grammys, all that crap, right? I thought that that would feel as good as anything, like feel better than anything I've ever done in music. But to be honest with you, it's hard to top the feeling of like the first time you ever like finish a song.
Mm.
Like the first time you ever like, he said in my case, was like program a beat and it'd be in tune. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
Like in my dorm, he said, I've been chasing that. And he said, so all the awards and everything that's great, like even like a great show, for instance, like where you know that you did it and you got over good and the people had a great time. It's still hard to top like what we felt in this room when we first started.
Yeah, we're in the studio and you first hear your song recorded back and to you and you're like, dang.
Yeah, you're like,
that's
wow.
That's so good.
Like, that's something, and it's a weird thing to even say that, you know, but like you do have that, you cross that bridge of going, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that kind of exceeded my expectations, you know?
Yeah, that is a good point. It feels way better to hear something you've done and just like freak out over it for a second than for someone else to pay you a compliment on it, you know?
Because we've already hit, the transaction's already over for us. Like, we know what we have. We're like, we appreciate your compliment, and I'm glad that you're getting the enjoyment that you're getting, because that's the point of it. Like,
but you have to love your music before first, you know? That really, that feeling is better than someone else loving it sometimes.
Oh, 100%, you know? And that's a real Cali Crier thing to say. You broke that down. You made that make sense. All of us were thinking it. You just said it, but we didn't know how to say it. I definitely didn't. So that's real. Because you're the one that's got to play it 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you record a song and you put on your record, like, you marry that song.
Yeah.
And like, bro, whether you want it or not, that's one of your kids. That's like, it's going to follow you around like a little, like ducks at the lake. Like, they're just going to follow you around.
That makes me think of something that Matt says sometimes during the show at night when we sing Your Grace Is Enough. He'll like stop in the middle and be like, all right, everybody, we're going to sing the last chorus. And then he's like, look, he's like, I wrote this song, you know, I don't know how many years ago he wrote it, 15 years ago or something. And he's like, I've had to sing this song every time I've sang in public, every time. He was like, it's way more times than you've ever had to sing it. He was like, if I have to mean it, then you guys can mean it.
That's real though.
And I'm like, yeah, it's true. Sometimes you just don't mean it.
No, you're
like,
so
you gotta like make yourself mean it somehow.
Singing that Joker. $10, $10.
Yeah.
That whole thing. Yeah. That's how you do. You're just like, man, I'm just trying to get the check. I hate these songs. But then other times you're like, dang, these songs actually say something.
Yeah.
And people get, you know, they're made better for it, you know? And anyway, I guess that's the whole reason why we ever get in this crazy game, to sit around and put ourselves over with it.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about how great our stuff sounds. Behind closed doors. No, that's not it, people. But all right, so I wanted to, the reason why I specifically called you today was or a couple weeks ago, I had this idea of like talking about some of our favorite records, like, and going into the specifics as to why, like, you know, you like those records, because I know we're gonna have some that like are on two opposite ends of the planet, but then there's gonna be some that like we agree on. And I'm curious to see how that kind of dance goes, because I think that sums up why, you know, our band sounds the way it does, is because it's two totally different schools of thought.
Mm.
And then somewhere in the middle, we agree on something.
Right.
And then we go back our separate ways again.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want from this conversation, like we said in the little pre-op here before we got going, is I like the records that not just like, you know, are good because they won awards or whatever, or that this and that, but like the records that sort of either change the way you thought about, you know, something that you do or that are so nostalgically tied to some era in your life that can be completely unrelated to music, but like, you know, whatever, you know, whatever those records are that are the soundtrack of your life and the ones that you think of, if you had to like, 'cause it's hard to me. Like, I was sitting here thinking about, I'm like, well, if I'm trying to think back the record, like my favorite records, the only ones that are going to come to my mind are the ones that made me feel something.
Yeah.
You know, the nostalgic ones. Because there's a ton of good records that I'm sure we're going to not talk about.
Right.
Amazing records that we like and love.
Right.
But it's like, which are the ones that you know, made us feel something to the point that when we hear them again, like, we can't escape whatever that was at that time frame.
Yeah. So. I mean, right now, a few that are coming to mind, I think just because I'm talking with you about it, are records that our whole band got behind and we all really bonded over, because we, coming together, we all liked such different music that that was kind of a rare thing. And just a few that I'm remembering that I remember we all listened to these, were, we all loved that, we all loved that Suburbs record.
Absolutely.
By Arcade Fire. When it came out,
we played that thing.
We played it in the van
a zillion times.
And we didn't do that a whole lot. We didn't just sit as a group and listen to records together. And that was one that we did.
Yeah.
And
that's the one that actually, honestly, sparked this conversation, because it came on the radio when I was driving. I was like, and immediately I was taken to that. I was like, amazing. I'm calling Callie to do this. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Because we listened to that together, and we didn't. That wasn't something that we made a huge habit of doing.
I remember when the thing was coming out. And Ian had pre-ordered it, and I was like,
they were like
two
or three songs.
Even care. I don't care anything about this band. I don't. I'm not interested in what this is. Like, this is Phoebe's thing or whatever.
This is her weird indie stuff that she likes.
Yeah, but dude, when we played that thing from top to bottom, and we would listen to it for, I mean, just over and over and over again. And we never did that. We never turned on the CD player or the whatever. The iPod cord and just listen to records in the van, because everybody has their own agenda.
Yeah.
Or two people will be doing one thing and two people will be doing another or whatever. But like, yo, that one, like, from top to bottom. So what do you like about that one?
I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't listened to it in several years, so I'm having a hard time remembering even all the songs on it. I just, mainly it was that feeling.
Yeah.
Of us together. I mean, it was summertime, I think. It was a summer record, and it sounded like a summer record.
Yeah, it did. And we were
so
at the beach.
So it was good for windows down, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember, too, we went and saw them, and that was their tour.
Oh, yeah, right as it came out.
Yeah, and so, and they were great. Like, I distinctly remember one of the things that he said. He walked up there, and he was like, even though we're here in Nashville at the Ryman, the most famous place ever, we're just gonna try to be ourselves right now, instead of, like, freaking out and acting weird, you know. And I was like, oh man, that was real, you know.
Yeah. And it's crazy because, like, you know, really Ian gets a lot of credit. He bought the record and he freaking had the tickets to the Ryman hookup.
Oh, that's right.
And so, like, we heard the record for like a week straight and then went and saw them play that record. Like, how do you not have nostalgic weirdness over that?
Another record that I feel that way about, and I'm sure I've told you this many times, was The Hazards of Love, Decemberists. And that worked in reverse, because we just bought those tickets on a whim to go see them. I wasn't even that big of a fan. Like, I liked a few of their songs, and I didn't know what record they were touring. But we just went and saw it. And, you mean, you remember that show. It was unreal.
Yeah. The thing about that is, see, we had a friend that we just mentioned that had the hookup at the Ryman. So we were just going to see anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
And it was like almost chalking it up for research.
It was like $20 a person. You know? It was cheap then. Now it's like $50 to go to.
Yeah, yeah. We would pay in like, I think we paid like $20 or $25 a pop. And it's like, dude, how do you not pay that?
Yeah.
You know, like,
and he would get us good seats.
Oh, yeah. The other night we paid, I went down the street and paid $20 a ticket for Avid and the arena, because the arena wasn't sold out. So it's like easy to do, you know?
Right.
I was like, dude, how do you not do that? You know, but the Decemberists thing, I had never heard of them, didn't know a single song. Didn't listen to anything beforehand, but was just going.
We were just in that phase of starting a new band and drinking in everything we could get in. Like, that's back when we paid to go to shows.
Oh, absolutely.
Before we were jaded.
Yeah.
But anyway, this show was amazing because it was a concept album. It was a rock opera. They had hired different people to play the characters in this.
It was like a Broadway.
Yeah, I mean, it was like Broadway, but there were no lines. It was all music, and you weren't quite sure what it meant. Like you would in a, it was like, it felt like an opera, because you don't, even though you understood the language, if you didn't know the backstory and you couldn't catch every word, it was hard to know what was happening. But I loved it so much that I bought that record, because remember, they played two sets. They played The Hazards of Love front to back, then they took a break, then they came out,
and they didn't say jack in that
no,
first set.
They didn't say a word. They just sang everything. And then they came out and talked and, you know, sang some old hits and stuff like that,
and so, were hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, so charming. So I bought the record, and then I listened to that record constantly for a while, and it's still one of my favorites.
Dude, I remember the next night, because, like, you know, I was like, okay, that was definitely an experience that I had.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I remember because you mentioned the record again. And I listened to the whole thing again, and I didn't know that you were doing the same thing. But we had this conversation, like, at some point, either the next day or the following, where I was like, dude, I went back and listened to that whole record, too.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, if you still, it holds up right now. I mean, you're talking about No Holds Barred and just they don't care about the rules.
Yeah.
That sucker was just a baller, you know, and still. Today, that one stands up to me with, like, records like The Who's Tommy and, you know, those type of rock operas from that time. And, like, Meatloaf, like, Bat Out of Hell. Like, those type of records where you're like, this is an experience. This is what every record, you know what I mean? Probably originally at some point was. Now it's like, you know, 10 singles. Mm-hmm. But, like, that right there is a real throwback to just, man, this record. Like, you put this record on when you're in a certain mood and you just let it go.
Right.
You don't skip songs. You don't. You gotta.
You can't skip songs.
No, you'll miss the point.
Yeah,
and that was an amazing record. So that's crazy because, like, again, real early on, and we didn't agree on Jack, but we agreed on that.
We also agreed on. Now I'm blanking on the name, but what was that Avid record before?
Emotionalism.
We all agreed on Emotionalism.
Yeah, somebody had that in their car. Yeah,
I had that in my car for a long time.
Yeah, and we were just. That was when you shared a car. That's right. You and Phoebe had the same car. And it was your car. And we would just spin that thing over and over. That still is, man.
Yeah, so good.
That's still
songs.
The tops, you know, for them. Like, I don't know. If I have one record to, like, introduce somebody to the Avid Brothers with, it's like, it's that one. The cover on it's brilliant, too. Mm-hmm.
That record
cover.
Really helped me understand lyricism. Lyricists. Just, like, lyric writing, I guess. Because it's all about the lyrics. You can hear every word. It's the music is pretty exposed. It was before they were getting more into rock, you know, and that's why it was good. But yeah, I was like, man, these are great lyrics. They're very simple. They're plain, you know, but man, they give you a feeling.
Man, I went to see them the other night, and it was like the first song that they did. Now, I'm sure you can name off 10 songs like that you would think they would open their show with, and he opens with Ballad of Love and Hate.
Nice.
Just by himself.
Nice.
And it's like, what? But that song holds up, man, because it's such a lyrical journey and story.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, those guys, we were listening, and, like, Kyla had never seen them before, so we're just taking it all in or whatever. And I'm like what you said, just simple but to the point and quick. Like, they don't need a lot of words to say what they're trying to say.
Well, that's what makes a good song.
Yeah, and you've always said that, and Phoebe's always said that, too. Is just like say it with as little words as possible, you know, to get your point over, and you can always try to shave more off.
Right.
But these guys, man, like, and their new record, I haven't heard it yet because it's not out yet, but the stuff that they played from it was like some of the acoustic stuff, the down stuff was like that old school Avid Brothers stuff. And you're just like, gosh,
nice.
You guys, like, man. You know, they went there on a lot of this stuff, too. Like, they're pretty bold with the things they say at this point because it's not like they're going to get in trouble or whatever.
Yeah, they're over.
Yeah, they're married. They're good. Mm-hmm. Married audience, we're good.
Yeah.
So, give me a record now that is more like a you record and not like one that we have in common. Do you got any off the top of your head?
Yeah, a record that's consistently stayed one of my favorite records. It's been a couple years now. I'm trying to think of when I remember when I first listened to it. It was after Madeline Lewis's wedding. Shout out to Maddie Lewis, one of the Lewis sisters, famous Lewis sisters that got this band together in the first place. We were at her wedding, and after the wedding, I left and I was driving to Bowling Green, Kentucky, I think, to see Reed play. So I had, I don't know, a couple hours to get there. And I was like, trying to think of what I wanted to listen to on the way, and I was like, this is a good time to listen to a new record that I've never heard because I have all this time to listen to the whole thing straight through. And I was thinking about how Kimbra, an artist that I liked, had a new record out because I'd seen her tweeting about it for months and months, and I just hadn't sat down and listened to it. So I Spotify'd it and I listened to it for the first time on that drive, and man, that record is still so good. One thing that I've always liked about it is that there's literally only one song on there that I want to skip. And that is a really good ratio in a 12 song record that you only want to skip one song. And I, so like, I was really into it for a few months and I finally got around to playing it for Reed. And Reed is kind of, he gravitates more towards male vocalists. And so I was really surprised by how much he loved that record. He still listens to it all the time. But yeah, it's her, I guess it's still her most recent record, The Golden Echo. It's just got so much, it's totally a pop record, but it's like old school pop, like Michael Jackson pop, you know, not modern lamb pop. but it's really, it's brainy, it's heady, but it's also catchy. Like, it's just all around great. And she does some sick stuff with her voice and some really, she has some really sick sounds and sick beats and stuff. So The Golden Echo,
there you go,
still a fave.
Yeah, I remember when you heard that and you were telling everybody about it.
Yeah,
telling everybody.
Yeah, I still tell people about it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, she's unbelievable. Like, I don't know, she's a real standard bearer to me. Mm. With like what art and music, like, you know, you see stuff and you're just like, well, that's basically BS and whatever, you know, you're not that talented, but you were probably really, really
well produced,
fortunate with the scenario which brought you to this
right
dance here. Whereas this other girl, this Kimber girl, you're just like, dude, she's just a badass. And like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter if anybody would have got behind her, it would have got over eventually because you just can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that kind of a talent, you know, all it needs is exposure and it's going to do its thing. So
there's another record too. I can't remember the name of it. Let me look it up right now. But it's by Jamie Cullum, which I don't know if you know who that is.
No, I do.
Okay. I need to find out what record it's, the name of the record, so I can say what it is. But that one came out a few years ago. And Reed and I have both really, really gotten into that one. I think because we saw him in New York totally out of the blue. We were there on just on a little trip together. And we were like, what should we do tonight? And I guess Reed just looked up stuff that was happening in New York that night. And what do you know? Jamie Cullum's all the way over from England playing a show at this really pretty theater in Brooklyn. So we went and saw that. And we were excited because we'd been listening to his record all summer. And he played a bunch of those songs. And but the record's called Momentum. And it's really good. Even if you don't like jazz, it's not super jazzy. Which is a lot of what he's known for is his jazz piano, but it's really poppy and catchy and good.
Yeah, I remember he had a pop hit 10 years ago or so, which was what song? Do you remember?
I don't know.
I should know this. I failed the test. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know all of his discography. I just know that.
I just remember
really
one
well.
Big pop song. That's all I remember.
He wrote Gran Torino for that movie.
Really? He wrote that?
He wrote that song.
Holy cow. I saw that. I remember that movie.
Great movie.
Yeah. That's a great movie. Me and Bruno saw that in the theater one day. Shoot. Well.
Another record we have in common.
Go ahead.
Punch Brothers.
Oh my gosh. Which one?
Who's Feeling You Now?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, their new record's great, too, but that was one record ago, and it's still my favorite of their records.
Yeah, every song on it.
Dude, did you hear my story about him the other night?
I kind of got it on Instagram, like a birthday thing, but tell the people.
Me and Reed go and see the Punch Brothers at the Skirmerhorn a week or so ago. Yeah, 1 week ago. And we ran into a group of friends that we know there that were sitting in our section. So we all decided to go out to Patterson House afterwards to get a drink. So we all go there and there's a big group of us, like 10 or 11 of us. And we get a big table and we're all in our group talking about how good the show was, you know. And we're like, man, how sick would it be if Chris Seeley came to this bar? Because we were like, this is totally the type of place he would love. Because Patterson House is this really vibey, speakeasy type bar with really, you know, classy cocktails.
Where's that at again?
It's over near Demumbrian.
That's right.
Like off Division. So we're all talking about what if he came to this bar, you know? And so a few minutes later, you know, we're all like talking about one of the guys in our group had a birthday. And so we're all toasting each other, like toasting his birthday. It was me and Reed's anniversary. So we're toasting our anniversary. And then we start singing happy birthday to this guy in our group. His name was Zach. And someone at our table, I guess, was just kind of joking around. And so they turned around to because our table was right next to the bar. And he turned around and tapped this guy on the shoulder that was sitting at the bar. It was like, hey, this guy's name's Zach. You should sing happy birthday. You're like just sort of being stupid. And this guy at the bar turns around. And lo and behold, it's Chris Thiele, who's been sitting there and none of us noticed. So he sings happy birthday with us. And we're all like, oh, my gosh, like after it's over, you know, he turns around and kind of chuckles. And we're all like, we can't be ourselves after that because we're like, Chris Thiele's sitting right there. And so we're all like whispering and talking about it. And someone in our group was like, man, I want to go talk to him. And we're like, don't be weird, you know, don't be weird. And he was like, I have an idea. What if I give him a s'more? Because we had ordered these s'more desserts. And he was like, I can give it to him and say, your concert left me wanting s'more. And I was like, you've got to do that. I was like, Chris will love that. Trust me. He's cool. I was like, we sort of met him one time. Like, he was really nice. Because everyone was telling him not to go talk to him. And except for me. And I was like, trust me. Chris is going to like this. He's going to think it's funny. So I talked him into doing it. And he gets up and he takes the s'more over there. And he sets it down in front of Chris at the bar. And he goes, your concert left me wanting s'more. And of course, Chris cracks up.
Big pop.
He thinks it's hilarious. And Chris literally picked up the s'more right then and ate it. He didn't even care. Like some random stranger's giving him leftover dessert and he eats it. And he was like, cheers to us with his s'more and then put it in his mouth. So yeah, it was a good story. And then, you know, we left him alone. We didn't bug him after that. We all kind of left. But it was just...
That's great. I didn't know
I can now say
that
I have sang with Chris Thiele.
Okay, there you go. Because
we sang happy birthday.
Man... What a guy. See, he's like living for somebody. Like, work a little harder than the average jabroni, okay?
Yeah.
Like, don't just walk up like a mark, but like, here, make up something funny, yeah. Make him laugh, and then ask a man for a picture. How about you provide something here to this transaction?
We didn't ask him for a picture. Yeah. We didn't do anything.
That's smart. That's so smart.
We just gave him a funny memory.
Exactly. And nobody can ever take that away from you.
Yeah.
Screw that picture. You know what I mean? What are these pictures with these celebrities doing for you people? That's my question.
Yeah.
I don't really get it, you know? It's kind of awkward, to be honest.
Yeah, it is.
But it's okay. If you want to parade around with a picture of someone and that has value to you, then go ahead.
Yeah. But, I mean, it would be nice to have had a picture of him to prove that story is true.
You don't got to prove Jack. You got 10 witnesses.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you got 10 witnesses. So that's my soapbox about the pictures. I don't really get it.
Yeah.
But... oh my gosh, that is just blowing my mind. He was very nice when we met him, though.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That guy's probably just another guy. He wanted to go to the coolest bar in Nashville, so he did.
Yeah.
So I've heard all about that place, but I've never been there myself.
Yeah, it was cool. The violin player from Punch Brothers was there, too, with one of his friends. They were both sitting separately with a separate friend.
All right.
But yeah, it was cool.
Cool, man. Them guys. Talk about five people that know how to play music together.
That was a flawless show. It was a one mic thing. They played around one mic, and I was kind of disappointed at first. I was like, man, it's not going to be cool. Like,
But I mean, you're in a symphony.
But yeah, it was fun. I mean, I would have liked it a little louder,
mm-hmm.
just because people would cheer like after every solo, and you would be like, shut up, I want to hear, you know. But still, they did great. It was perfect.
Those guys, yeah, they're on another level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rest of us are just kind of, you know, shining shoes compared to that. I mean, yeah. Them guys are legit getting it done. So, let's see. What kind of time are we looking at here? What's another record that I like? I mean, I haven't really dialed one in yet. We named off a lot of the ones.
Is there anything new that
you're
really into?
Let me look at my thing real quick while we go here. Because
just personal recommendation for you.
Yeah.
If you want to hear a couple of really good songs with really good lyrics, listen to Jason Isbell.
Yeah.
Speed Trap Town.
Yeah, I've been listening to that.
Oh, you have?
Okay. Yeah.
Because that song, I'm obsessed with that song. So good.
Yeah,
you know, John Mayer says he's the best lyricist of his generation, and I kind of agree.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know. It's like, I'm not like in love with his voice or anything, but it's hard not to listen to like what he has to say.
Right, he's such a poet.
Yeah, let's see. I'm looking through my thing right now of stuff that you may not know. Okay, John Mark McMillan's wife, Sarah, has a record out called You Are the Avalanche.
Yeah, I've heard that she's really good.
Yes, and she is. And John Mark obviously is involved, you know, with it and sings with her, and it's a lot of his band. But they have a live record. Well, it's technically it's John Mark's record called Live at the Night, and that was the Night Theater in Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
But in the, they do a set with her, like a few songs with her in the middle, and she's singing with him and stuff, and that's pretty dang good. Mm. Like, they got the song called King of My Heart, which is a worship song, but dang, man, it's a great worship song, you know? Like, so that's, I've been listening to that one a lot. I got this recently played as a bunch of junk that you already know. Oh, I got hip to Josh Garrels. I'm late to the game on that. But like,
so good.
Saw him live and talk about flawless. Like, his voice.
He's such a good voice.
Yeah, his voice live is perfect. And like, the band was really, really dynamic and just, you know, did not get in the way of what his thing, what he's trying to accomplish. You know what I mean? And it was just, they complimented everything. And I don't say like didn't get in a way like, yo, you should play less. Like, that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is what you're playing,
they
every
framed
single thing,
him as the picture.
Everything,
really
every
well.
Single thing that you're doing should frame him, you know? And that's what's been, you know, that really jumped off at me. Honestly, like, he was opening for John Mark, and on that particular, you know, whoops, don't turn on. Don't play right now. I don't want you to play right now. On that particular day, I thought that Josh Garrels was way on point, and John Mark kind of was like, you could tell he was at the end of like 2.5 years of a tour.
Just tired out.
Yeah, whereas I saw him a year and a half ago, and he was like a lot of energy. And
yeah.
I ain't saying he phoned it in, but I mean, he kind of maybe. Like,
we all know what that's like.
Yeah, we've been there, and you know, it's long days, and the songs sounded great and everything, but Josh, like, I could tell he was like 100% in his vibe. Okay, a record I'm going to put over because I like these guys is Judah and the Lion, Folk Hop and Roll. It's kind of, it's not something you're going to like, probably, but like, this is one of those where like, this is me, and you know, me on the other side of the planet here. But I think lyrically speaking, that they're in some special territory with what they're saying. As young men who are, you know, rock stars, basically. Okay, they're on that level now of like, you know, they're on their way. They're going to play the Ryman one of these days, not too far off, and they're going to sell it out. Like, they're to that level. And, but I think lyrically, the things that, whoever's writing the songs, if Judah's writing the songs, that wherever he's at, the headspace he's at is really, really special because, like, you and me have talked at length about how sort of the roles of like men and women in relationships and with each other as friends, relationships with each other, you know, in marriages as co-human beings, like paying rent on planet Earth, like how that's so screwed up, you know what I mean? And how a lot of men don't sort of get it, like what, how to be like gentlemen anymore kind of thing, you know? And like how I've said this a million times, but I don't know how women, how girls do it now. How do you put your stock in these jabroni men? I don't know, because we are so, we have so many like immaturities, you know what I mean, as men, and we're our selfishness, we're blinded by our own selfishness, and we don't even realize we're selfish anyway, that kind of thing. But Judah, like, this whole record, like what I gather from this is like, this cat is, he just got married, you know, so he's been, you know, going through that process and everything, but I really feel like he understands like how that, like one of the songs, like the single on the song is like how he would give all this music crap up to be, to before he would ever, you know what I'm saying, not want to be with her. And I just think that's amazing, because like, he's kind of got the world on string and everything like that, but he's like, dude, none of this means nothing without her. You know, I'm just like, dude, some man needed to say that in pop music,
right?
You know, a few more of the other songs are just, you know, I'm kind of tired of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll like vibe, like that sort of, and there, that's like a song that's sort of like the anti sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Like, we can have fun, like legit fun, not like cheesy, you know, vacation Bible school fun or whatever. Like, you can't say and do, but like, have legit fun and have a beer or whatever. But like, we don't need all this other junk. You know what I mean? We don't have to be, we don't have to have, you know, 10 girlfriends You know what I mean? To feel like a man. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that kind of thing. I'm like, yo, like,
yeah.
And they're like doing this in pop music, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, much freaking respect.
Totally.
You know? And it's weird. This, like the way that they've been unafraid, like it's a brave record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They did the sounds that they want to do. They made up their own genre, you know, mixing folk music with hip hop music, with rock and roll music. And they're tearing it down every single night. And we saw them really early on, and like I was really gravitated to it from the beginning, and to see how far it's totally exceeded my expectations. Like these guys totally. So anyway, I'm excited about that. About music, like the fact that they're, you know, those things that we're talking about, like, man, that's like making society better. We're in an age now where, like, you know, we're hip to like the effects of all that other stuff,
right? Yeah, that's a really good point of view, because I think there's a lot of opinions going around about, you know, men and women and gender equality, inequality, all that stuff, and there's things about it that I think are good things that need to be said. Like, I think that it's true. Like, a lot of what women are saying now is that we don't need to let the opinions of men around us, you know, define who we are. And I think that's true. But I also think that as individuals, we need each other. Men and women need each other as individuals. Like, we can't just do everything on our own. But I think that's a good point. From the men's side of things is like, a man doesn't need the opinions of women around him to define who he is. We just need to be there for each other on a real sense, not as just, let me soak up all this praise from the opposite sex to feed my ego. Let me actually make this a real, you know, intentional relationship.
Yeah. And it's real easy as a man to like not realize that that's where your identity is wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you place your value on yourself. It's not that other people are placing it on you. You know what I mean? It's not like somebody's looking at me going, oh, well, this guy's not really over with the ladies, so he's not, you know what I'm saying, cool.
Yeah.
It's how we treat ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the way that we, you know, think about ourselves. And that's what's dangerous to me. But I don't know, man. Like, going back to, man, your identity's wrapped up in what Christ thinks about you. Like that.
Right.
Like, go back there, man.
Yeah.
Just live in that for a while. Study on that. Meditate on that. Fast on that. And it'll help with some of these insecurities, you know, Lord willing. So, well, what's next for you, cuz?
Oh, I mean, Reed and I are going to do a photo shoot tomorrow, take some band pics.
Oh, really?
We're trying to start a little.
So what are you calling it?
We're calling it Sidrey. Sidrey, I think, is how it's spelled. Which really doesn't have any meaning. It was just a word that wasn't taken. I think Reed made up that word when he was a kid because he was making up sports teams and he was making up players. And one of his players' name was Sidrey. So we're going to do a photo shoot for that. We're going to try to write some more songs tomorrow because we have some time together. And then, I'm flying out Thursday for another weekend of Matt Marr shows. So.
Well, cool. I sure do appreciate you coming on here and spending some time with me. You know what I'm saying? It's good to be around. We're like family at this point, so that's how I look at it. It's good to be around family.
Totally.
And it helps kind of, I mean, I don't know. If you think about our last almost decade of our lives, like we've both sort of processed different transitions in our lives by talking it out together.
Yeah.
And like ultimately, like when I have, you know, a question or a thought or like even an opinion or whatever, it's like in my brain is so you know, what do you call it, it's conditioned to like wonder what you guys think and bounce it off of y'all, because I know you'll give me a straight shot answer, and knowing what each other's, you know what each other's basic theology, where that lives or whatever, you know, it's like, man, I know it's gonna be accurate, I know it's gonna be good stuff, and get me off the wrong trail if I'm on the wrong trail. So it's cool.
That means a lot.
Well, that's real talk, man. Like, that's how I give you guys, the older we get and the further away we get from, you know, or the longer our testimony goes along, you realize like the people that in your life that truly made an impact in your life, you know, that truly like loved somebody well, you know, and like I've dawned on me the other day because every year we come around from the flood and it's like the anniversary for that. And I always like think back to, you know, how that before that and after that,
yeah.
You know, like that's, to me, that's like the unofficial, start date of like
the catalyst for your conversion.
Yes. And so like before that, it was like, you know, I was what one place and after that, but there was certain people that were there during this really, really fragile time or whatever. This really, I mean, to be honest with you, that's a tough time to be around a person. It's like being around a person whenever they're going through some kind of transition or whatever. It's just different than when they're doing their thing. But, you know, you two, y'all had every reason to roll out and leave and get away. You know what I mean? From us, people like Brian and Erica and Maddie, like all those folks were around us and like, you know, kind of carried us to the table,
right?
You know, and that's kind of how, you know, we feel now and the type of thing that, you know, what I want to do for somebody else, you know, cause it was done for me. So anyway, thank you cuz I appreciate it. I hope our story is just kind of getting started, you know?
Same.
Well, thank you folks for listening to, me and Callie go down memory lane and sort of talk about different things that we like about certain records and funny stories that we have. And this is who we are. This is what we're like. Yeah. If you ever wondered, this is exactly it. And, I'm honored to, have had her on the show now twice. So till next time, I'm Taylor Jones for Callie Cryer. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.